The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by Gaia, the streaming TV service dedicated to exploring the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained. 5,000 years of wisdom on demand. Get your first month for only 99 cents. Visit Gaia.com/Jim. That's Gaia.com/Jim to see what's happening on the largest consciousness media streaming platform in the world. Thanks, Gaia. Also, The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by Bombas, the best socks in the history of feet. Get 20% off your first order. Go to bombas.com/Jim. That's bombas.com/Jim. Thanks, Bombas.
This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you today. And we have a great show for you. And we have, well, I love these shows where we have two totally different topics coming from kind of different ends of the spectrum, but both fascinating in their own right. And today is no exception. We start off with Lyle Blackburn. He is probably one of the greatest cryptozoologists in the field today. He's been an author of multiple books, and his latest is Beyond Boggy Creek in Search of the Southern Sasquatch, and we have him here today, and Lyle's going to tell us about the Southern Sasquatch and his work in regard to finding it. And fascinating talk. I think you'll enjoy it. And then for the something completely different in part two, Dondi Dolan will join us, and she'll talk about the five elements, understand yourself, and enhance your relationships with the wisdom of the world's oldest personality type system. Neat stuff. So I think you're going to enjoy this doubleheader, and so we go into the Paranormal Podcast. Well, we've got a great guest today and a great subject. Nobody really better to talk about on this particular scenario and situation that we're going to talk about. Our guest is Lyle Blackburn. We're going to talk about his new book, Beyond Boggy Creek in Search of the Southern Sasquatch. Now, Lyle's research and writing on the subject of Bigfoot has widely been recognized as some of the best in the field of cryptozoology. His previous books, including The Beast of Boggy Creek and Lizard Man, offer a balanced view of the subject while delivering gripping accounts of this real-life mystery. Lyle is a frequent guest on radio programs such as Coast to Coast AM. He's been on our show as well before, and he has appeared on many television shows, including Monsters and Mysteries in America and Finding Bigfoot. Lyle and his research have also been featured in the award-winning documentary Boggy Creek Monster, and I believe he's also executive producer on an upcoming movie, another one, with Seth Breedlove and the Small Town Monsters folks, and this one's going to be on Mothman. Lyle, welcome to the program today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations on the success of the movies. We've had Seth on, and we know that his company and his movies are just exploding, so congratulations on that. That's going to be pretty exciting.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was great to work with Seth and kind of get my hands in the film visual side of things after having, you know, been writing the book. So it works perfectly with sort of the approach that they take in their films and, you know, the way I like to present my research. So it really worked out great.
Now, you've previously done a book on Boggy Creek, The Beast of Boggy Creek. What does this new book, Beyond Boggy Creek, add to the picture?
Well, you know, the Beast of Boggy Creek, in that book, I covered specifically the case of the Boggy Creek Monster, the Fount Monster, which was made famous by the old Legend of Boggy Creek movie. You know, one movie that has, you know, been very influential on folks getting into Bigfoot research and things like that, you know, featured on Finding Bigfoot and kind of brought to a new generation. So in some ways, you know, the Legend of Boggy Creek case was sort of the most famous of the Southern Sasquatch cases. And even for myself, being from Texas, really wasn't until I saw that movie as a kid that I realized that Bigfoot creatures, you know, could possibly exist, you know, outside the Pacific Northwest. And so with Beyond Boggy Creek, I sort of had compiled, you know, a lot more information, whether they were, you know, archived stories or old newspaper reports, as well as, you know, interviews I'd done with witnesses that were all across the Deep South. And some of these were, you know, just as fascinating as and gripping as the stories you have out of Boggy Creek. So the premise of Beyond Boggy Creek was to sort of start with that, you know, here's the famous Boggy Creek case, but we're going to go out geographically across the whole Deep South and explore, you know, the bigger picture of the Southern Sasquatch.
Now, when you talk about the Southern Sasquatch, is it the same Sasquatch we see in other parts of the country and the world, or is this a totally different animal? Or some people don't think it's an animal, a totally different phenomenon.
Well, I mean, the phenomenon itself, you know, is very much like any other Bigfoot situation. You know, you have, you know, a general description of a tall, large, hairy, bipedal creature existing in wooded areas, you know, and I think in, you know, in some regards, yes, it's a Bigfoot, but, you know, if you want to get specific and you try to get as, you know, the characteristics of it, there are some unique aspects to the Southern version. You know, some of those being that, you know, it's a little more unkempt, a little more hairier. There's more accounts of this aggressive behavior or attacks. Even sometimes it seemed to travel on all fours. So it, in some ways, the descriptions describe it more ape-like than man-like. So, you know, there's quite a bit of variations, and this could be, you know, just the nature of a you know, creature that's living in a different habitat. I mean, the Pacific Northwest is a cooler, mountainous region. And down here, you know, you have sightings in swamps and bayous and southern pine forests. So, you know, it is somewhat of a different environment, and that could explain the differences. But to me, you know, it's some species thereof of a Bigfoot-like creature.
Now, it's interesting here. You have different categories that you've broken this into. This one caught my attention. They always follow the creeks. Now, we know Boggy Creek. Sounds like it's more than just Boggy Creek, though.
Oh, certainly. That's one of the things that was sort of put forward by the Boggy Creek case, and it was first kind of theorized by the locals there in Falk in the early 70s as the newspapers would talk to them about it, because the creature that was sighted there, or the creatures, were often, you know, near the waterways, which was not just Boggy Creek, but the Sulphur River and Mercer Bayou and some other things in that area. So you find that to be true as you could travel up the Sulphur River to its origin in Texas. And all along that waterway, you kind of have a history of encounters with these same kind of creatures. And certainly, you know, a creature like this, they're not going to recognize man-made boundaries of any sort. They don't care what state it is. You know, they're just moving along natural geography and, you know, would need to stay close to water. So, you know, in a chapter such as that, I sort of, explored the fact that, you know, the Boggy Creek case had those certain characteristics, and so do the other cases across the South where you often see the sightings near waterways.
Is the Southern Sasquatch, is the Southern Sasquatch passive? Is it aggressive, or is it a mixture of both?
Well, it's definitely a mixture, but there are, you know, a significant number of these aggressive behaviors. You know, in some ways you have, you know, your typical Bigfoot sightings in which it's seen, you know, briefly moving through the woods, it appears, or it's running across the road. But then you do have these cases where it seemingly, you know, trying to attack people. It's even, you know, there's accounts in my book where these creatures are said to have injured people. You know, and that was kind of also played up in the legend of Boggy Creek, the climactic scene where the aggressive creature is trying to get in the house and they're shooting at it. And that was based on a real report. And, you know, I found accounts like that in the mountainous areas of Oklahoma, where there had been, you know, groups of these creatures, you know, trying to assail people in their homes, trying to get in through the windows. And I mean, you have a number of really spooky accounts like this that span all the way, you know, across the deep South of this aggressive behavior.
Now, how intelligent is the Southern Sasquatch? I mean, are we seeing signs of extreme intelligence in its actions?
Well, you know, I mean, it's hard to say, but I mean, in general, I suppose a creature that has managed to remain elusive for this long, you know, logically just has to have an above average intelligence for an animal, you know, if we're going to propose it's an animal. Now, you know, it's not like it's seen using tools or any of this sort of stuff. And then you, if you want to look at the aggressive, you know, cases, then they appear to be, you know, as other animals just acting on instinct or whatever they're doing to protect their territory. So, you know, there's no real data that can rate the intelligence, but, you know, I think just in general, they would have to have, you know, a certain amount of wherewithal to stay away from humans as much as possible and to, you know, not get run over by a semi and that sort of thing to keep them elusive.
Some of the different chapters and subsections you have here, I see something called the Bigfoot War. What was the Bigfoot War?
That was something that has been sort of a staple of the internet stories, and that occurred supposedly in Oklahoma. That was a case that it was about 1855, and as the story goes, this was in the LaFleur County area. This is in the southeastern part of Oklahoma, where today you do have a significant number of Bigfoot encounters. But as the story goes, there was a tribe or a group of some sort of man beasts, as they called them, that were attacking and stealing children from a you know, European settlement there, and ended up they sent some a group of you know, soldiers that part, you know, Native Americans, and this one LaFleur, Captain LaFleur, and they went and they found these man beasts, and you know, where they were living, and had this battle as it goes, and ended up, you know, killing some of these creatures, and you know, very much like you would hear, I don't know, settlers versus Indians. But in this case, it was, you know, the humans versus what was called a man beast. And the stories propagated around, and I looked into it, you know, in sort of a investigative journalist sense, and could find, you know, there's no real proof of this. And there are some details in the story which can be verified, such as some of the names of the Native Americans that were involved and who lived there at the time. And of course, they don't, you know, back then you don't have referrals to Bigfoot. I mean, that term wasn't used. And, you know, the best you can get is man beast or wild man, and it would be described as this sort of huge, hairy, you know, type person or animal. And so that was one that sort of in the canon of Southern Bigfoot tales, and one, again, that shows that, you know, they could possibly be very aggressive.
Now, you said something interesting there. The idea of this was back way, way back. How far back do these sightings go? Because I think many people probably think it started in the 1950s or 1960s, but it seems to go much further back.
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, if you start combing through, you know, those newspaper accounts from the 1800s, you know, you do have quite a few of them that that mention these wild man type creatures. I mean, the Tennessee wild man, that's one that was prominently called such a name and on the record. And, you know, again, in those, you know, the descriptions vary slightly, but they're always sort of this, you know, general Bigfoot type creature. And, you know, there's a couple of accounts and things that go back to the 1700s as far as European wow. settlers, you know, scant, you know, lesser documented things, mentions in old books. And then, of course, if you want to look at Native American tales, you know, many of the southern tribes, just like those in the Pacific Northwest, such as the Caddo Indians, would have names for creatures that would translate roughly to things like lost giant or hairy man or forest giant or forest people. And, you know, while we can't, you know, determine if those are, you know, truly Bigfoot in the sense of what we think of as Bigfoot, it does, you know, at least support the fact that if these creatures have been here all along, then certainly the Native Americans would have seen them. And, you know, subsequently the European settlers, and, you know, mentioned in the newspapers. And of course, once you get to the 1900s, you know, newspapers, there's more newspapers and more steady accounts that just blossom. So I think that's why a lot of people think it kind of, oh, well, this all kind of started in the 40s and 50s. And but you can certainly trace it back further than that.
The book is Beyond Boggy Creek, In Search of the Southern Sasquatch. Our guest today is Lyle Blackburn, and we'll be back right after this on The Paranormal Podcast. The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by Gaia, the streaming TV service dedicated to exploring the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained. And keep listening, because I'm going to tell you how you can get your first month for only 99 cents. Now, you're a Paranormal Podcast fan. You're listening to the show, so you're obviously interested in the supernatural, the unusual, the strange, the Fortean. And the question is, where do you go if you want a streaming TV service with those same values, with that same type of content? Well, there's simply one answer, and I've been telling you, and I will continue to tell you, it is Gaia. Because Gaia explores the topics we love and is always providing viewers with tremendous new content. This week is no exception. If you were a member of Gaia, you could watch shows like Missing Links by Greg Braden. He did a show on ensuring humanity's continuation. Or Linda Moulton Howe on her show Truth Hunter, proof of presidential briefings on alien presence. Ooh, that sounds like a good one. Or perhaps we've got Beyond Belief by George Norrie, exposing GMO agendas. Just so much great content. And there is a page now where you can kind of get a flavor for all the different kind of content that they have. They've set up a page for me, Gaia.com/Jim. That's Gaia.com/Jim. And what I really like about this is they have a lot of little snippets. So you can quickly get a sense of what you're missing by not being in Gaia. For example, this one video alone has gotten 95,000 views. It's called From Folklore to Fact, Bigfoot and Dogman with Jack Carey. And I think that really makes sense given our topic on the show today. So I thought I'd point that one out. That's over at Gaia.com/Jim. You scroll down to the paranormal section. You can actually just, they've got a button at the top that says paranormal. It'll take you right down to it. Other topics under that, Dispelling Doubts of the Afterlife. And these are all free previews they have. You can check these out. Linda Moulton Howe on Unearthly Phenomenon. And then there's other great sections here. Secrets and Cover-Ups. They talk about Pushing the Limits of Disclosure with John Lear and Cosmic Disclosure. And I'm looking here, Secrets of the Apollo Missions with William Tompkins. That's under New in Seeking Truth. Really just, I love Gaia. Really, there's nothing like it. It's like a supermarket for consciousness studies, I guess I would say. And it's your one-stop shop, of course, other than my podcasts. Don't want to forget those. But I think you're really going to like it. So go to Gaia.com/Jim. And the other thing that I will point out to you is, that in the upper right-hand corner of that page at Gaia.com/Jim, there's a little red button that says sign up. And if you click on that, you'll have the opportunity to sign up for your first month for only 99 cents. And there's some other great offers there too. But if you just want to dip a toe, you can sign up for only 99 cents. Gaia is great. And you're going to want to check it out. Visit Gaia.com/Jim. That's GAIA.com/Jim. That's Gaia.com/Jim to see what's happening on the largest consciousness media streaming platform in the world. Thanks, Gaia. Our guest is Lyle Blackburn. The book is Beyond Boggy Creek in Search of the Southern Sasquatch. And really, Lyle is a font of knowledge in this area. He is the man to talk to, and we're so glad to have him. Lyle, one thing, you think of a Southern Sasquatch, you probably think that people in the South maybe are a little, have a tendency a little more to be armed. Why haven't one of these wild men, one of these Boggy Creek style monsters, the Southern Sasquatch, why hasn't one been killed?
Yeah, well, that's the golden question right there. I mean, certainly I have accounts of these creatures, you know, coming up on hunters in the woods and several spooky encounters where, you know, a hunter could have certainly dropped one of these creatures or attempted to. But what I find in those cases is that once it, you know, it comes into contact and up close with somebody like that, the hunters always say it looks just too manlike. I mean, they can tell that it's not a person in a costume in most cases, but, you know, the margin for error, they just don't want to risk it. And, you know, even if it is, you know, they believe it's some sort of creature, they just feel that it has some amount of human quality to where they just can't pull the trigger. Now, that being said, there are a number of groups here in the South that have sort of taken it up as their mission to bring in a specimen. And, you know, this is a controversial subject in the world of Bigfoot. You know,
yeah, we had the Gulf Coast group on, but they have a TV show, Killing Bigfoot. They were on several weeks ago. Yeah. Big controversy, but go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, one of the groups that I even talk about in the book with the original area they were investigating in Western Louisiana, which they call Monster Central. And, you know, in my book, I sort of tell, you know, the history of how those guys first had sightings and began to get into this subject. And as time went on, I think that in many cases they became frustrated and wanted to, you know, prove it or whatever. And I think there's not much argument that the only way to prove Bigfoot exists at this point is for there to be a specimen. Now, you know, it just depends on the opinion of the person, whether, you know, we should shoot one or whatever. You know, I don't advocate that in any way, but yeah, there's been groups that are actively trying to, you know, bring one down. But in the end, what it seems is these creatures are still just so highly elusive, and they're very fast. That's one thing that people don't quite understand. And if you read the book, you'll see that there's many accounts where people reported them being able to move very fast. And you kind of think of Bigfoot as a sort of the lumbering, you know, Patterson-Gimlin thing where, oh, that'd be easy to shoot. Well, not really the case. When these things want to move, they can move extremely fast. And I think that's one reason why at least the hunters are having trouble, you know, putting their sights on one. So yeah, there's a lot of guns down here, but in the end, I think people, you know, see a man-like creature in the woods, they're just going to be hesitant to pull that trigger. It's not like seeing a, you know, a coyote or a deer or something, right, where it's very easy to identify. This is much more of a gray area and not where people are going to, you know, risk their freedom over.
This is one I've got to ask you about. The realm of the skunk ape. Talk to us about the skunk ape.
Well, the skunk ape is a term that's been used generally through the South, but more specifically in the Florida area. I think as people think about, you know, cryptids in Florida, it always comes up as the skunk ape. So that's sort of what they call Bigfoot there. It was a term that you can't trace a specific date of origin, but it, at least back to the early 70s, was applied to the sightings down there. And there's been some debate on whether the skunk ape is, you know, a Bigfoot or whether it's something, you know, different. And again, it does, there are reports of it being a little more ape-like, some smaller in stature and often walking on four legs. So the Florida area, you know, it's in the southern part, you have the Everglades, you have a lot of swampy areas out there. And the skunk ape term comes from the smell that's supposedly associated with these creatures, and probably rightly so. If you're covered in hair and living in a, you know, in a marshy area, you're going to be, you know, you're going to smell bad. So, but yeah, the skunk ape has a super long history, and surprisingly enough, I mean, Florida probably ranks about number three in the sheer number of encounters, you know, in the 48 states. And so that's, you know, it's one that you could write a whole book about, honestly. You know, it's kind of difficult even to put that into one chapter, because once you start digging into it, you realize, man, there is just so much history to this and so much to it that I really think that Florida, if you're going to, you know, if you wanted to see a Bigfoot in the South, that would be one place that you'd have, you know, a good chance.
So, another one here. I love this one. What are boogers and buggers, aside from maybe what we normally associate with that? Boogers and buggers.
Well, you know, one thing that I find a lot of fun in the Southern Sasquatch case is that there's a lot of different terms used to describe these creatures. And like with skunk ape, you know, it's a lot of these are regionally based. You know, you have the Boggy Creek Monster, and it was near the town of Falk, so they called it the Falk Monster. And, you know, if you look back in newspaper reports that sort of preceded the term Bigfoot, they would use all sorts of terms. And boogers and buggers are just two of the terms that were kind of used throughout the South. People would say, well, there's a booger in the woods, and you kids don't go out there because, you know, these huge, you know, huge hairy things will get you. And they were, you know, used to describe Bigfoot-like creatures before there was a term Bigfoot. So, in fact, I've got a list in the book that kind of goes state by state with this just mind-blowing number of regional names. As far as, you know, there really was a case back in Georgia known as the Belt Road Booger, and that was reported in 1979 near the city of Noonan. And a lot of people at that time saw a creature, it was, you know, like a upright Bigfoot-like creature in the area, and they dubbed it the Belt Road Booger. So this would be, you know, one way how the newspapers would, you know, apply a fun name to it. And they sort of used that historical booger name in this case to tie in with the sightings.
What's one of your favorite stories in the book?
Oh, man. Well, there's a lot. Yeah, there's so many, and if you look at the historical accounts, you know, there's some that you know, really play up the lengthy encounter. I'd say one of my favorites was one that just sort of haunts me. It's just a real spooky encounter. In this case, there was a hunter in East Texas who was sitting on a tree stand. He'd come in there along the Sabine River. He got there early before the sun came up, and he was hunting hogs on that particular morning. And as the sun started coming up, he could hear some hogs rooting and coming towards his bait area. And so, you know, he was just sort of waiting it out till he could get a good shot. Well, suddenly he noticed something sort of out of the right corner of his eye, and he looks up and looks through his scope, and he can see what appears to be some sort of a creature moving from tree to tree. And as it got closer and closer, he could see that it was ape-like. It would stand up on 2 feet. You could see the profile of it. You know, it was covered in hair. It was significantly large. And then as it would get from one tree to the other, it would, you know, just sort of leap between the trees. Well, it was moving very stealthily, and the hogs continued to move in. And he could see that this creature was basically stalking these hogs. And he's watching this whole thing unbeknownst to any of these animals, you know, from his tree stand. Well, finally, you know, it gets within a close proximity to these hogs, and suddenly it just makes this yelping howl or something and jumps and literally grabs one of the hogs and throws it against the tree. And, you know, the rest of the hogs scatter, and then he jumps on this hog, you know, and conceivably in a predatory way, I guess, for food. And then, you know, picks this thing up like it's nothing and stands up. By now, of course, the hunters, you know, just not only is he trying to process this, what is this thing? What am I looking at? You know, it's this big, upright, hairy creature, but also he sees it, you know, just easily take down 150, 200-pound hog with no problem. So he's, you know, feeling, I guess, lucky that he, you know, that the thing hasn't seen him. Well, sure enough, the thing stands up and it kind of looks around like it's looking, like it could sense that there was something there, someone else, or, you know, it could smell something. And finally, it raises its head and looks right up and looks right at this hunter. And the hunter is somebody I had interviewed personally on a couple of occasions. And, you know, here is another case where he said, you know, it just looked, it looked too formidable. He said, I didn't want to shoot it because if I didn't, if I missed or it didn't knock it down, this thing's coming up the tree. So the thing just looks at him for a couple of moments, kind of bares its teeth, and then just picks up the hog again and walks off into the woods.
Wow. just, it's like, yeah. I'm not going to mess with that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I just try to put my, you know, try to imagine myself in that position and just, you know, and of course I'm hearing this story firsthand, you know, from the witnesses, and this is something I'm reading on the internet, you know, this is like, wow. And, you know, he's, I mean, he's kind of got the same feel. He's like, it was just so frightening and just, I couldn't get my mind around what I was seeing. And it was so, you know, just terrifying. And he's, this is a guy with a gun, and, you know, it walks off, but, you know, it's just one of those that sort of sticks with you because of the prolonged sighting. You know, this wasn't just, well, I saw it run across the road. This was something significant.
Now, some people would say, you know, these are tall tales. People are making things up, you know, wishful thinking. They're seeing a bear, those kind of things. What would you say to people who have that kind of opinion? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I mean, it's certainly understandable. I mean, I understand, you know, people being skeptical of this because, yeah, there isn't any real proof. And, you know, it's just hard to get your mind around. For, you know, it's something you probably have to see to ultimately believe. But the thing is when you're somebody like me and you're doing research on this and, you know, at this point, you know, almost on a daily basis, I'm getting contacted by people who have had experiences, and I'm interviewing more and more people. Rest assured, there is a number of these that, you know, you just can't find rational explanations for. And there's people who, you know, these witnesses I have not only interviewed on phone. I've met in person. I've actually gotten to know them, know their family, and it gives me a real better sense of, would this person make something up like this? And, there's one in our Boggy Creek Monster documentary, which I consider at the top of my sighting, all-time best sightings. And this guy, Terry Sutton, had seen a creature near Falk, Arkansas in 1981. Well, he saw it at a very close range. Shortly thereafter, his dad was on site. I mean, everything really adds up to the point where I just can't explain what this guy saw. He saw something. There is no doubt about it. And it was too close, for him to misidentify it as a bear. It wasn't a place where a person in a costume would have been or could have been. So at the end of the day, you just have these stories that just leave you scratching your head, but there is something to it. Not to mention, we've got examples of some good footprint casts. You've got hairs that come up that can't be identified. There's a number of physical pieces of evidence as well that sort of support everything that's going on. So it's something people have to have an open mind. But if you read my book, I think you would come away from it saying, well, there is no way this is all made up. It's not hallucination. The documentation is there. There's something to it.
What's your theory? Do you have one?
Well, I still sort of operate at the base theory that the creature is a biological entity. It's some sort of a primate that's defied explanation and remained elusive for this long, something that's a master of its own environment. Until further proof or something suggests otherwise, I just sort of operate on that. But I realize that, there's many theories to this, and many of those theories are just trying to explain how it is that we can see these and we can't, capture one or whatever. So that's kind of my premise and where I, much like the legend of Boggy Creek, where I sort of started with my interest in this, that, some kind of thing living in the woods, a creature, a ape-like creature that was, living in the bayous down there. And that seems to be the case.
Do you have hope that we'll get to the bottom of it? Do you think that something is going to change? I mean, are there any developments in research, anything that's maybe a game changer where we can get to the truth, do you think?
Well, I would hope so. I think, I'm sure that would turn some heads, if this could be proven in some way. People say, oh, well, this guy wasn't crazy for writing all these books, but, I'm fascinated with the story itself, no matter what. It's an interesting story, however it turns out. But I think, if one could be proven, I think it would be a game changer. And there are some ongoing hot spots, let me call them, where things are being repeatedly seen and seen by people that I find very credible. And it's almost like, I think at just any minute now, I'm going to get a phone call, I'm going to hear about this, or something is going to develop. But it always sort of seems to be that way. And another year goes by and there's still not any ultimate proof. So I don't know if it'll happen soon. It seems like it will, but they're just one step ahead of us, I think.
Well, it's really, really interesting. I think it's fascinating. And I think that if you're interested in cryptozoology, the idea of Sasquatch, specifically the Southern Sasquatch beyond Boggy Creek, you definitely need to pick up this book. I highly recommend it. Lyle knows his stuff, and he really is one of the top researchers out there. Lyle, where can people find the book and more information about all of your work, whether it's the books, other things you do, the documentaries? Where can they find all that?
Well, you can start with my website, lyleblackburn.com, L-Y-L-E, blackburn.com, and that's got links to all my projects and information therein. Of course, my books are available where other fine books are on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, available in Kindle and Nook and e-formats and paperbacks and even hardbacks. So, just hit my website and you can find some links there.
Our guest has been Lyle Blackburn. The book is Beyond Boggy Creek in Search of the Southern Sasquatch. Lyle, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
If you are into cryptozoology, by all means, pick up Lyle's book. He is one of the best in the business. And next up is Dondi Dolan. She is going to talk to us about the five elements right after this on The Paranormal Podcast. The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by Bombas, the best socks in the history of feet. Yes, in the history of feet, the entire history. And you could get 20% off your first order by going to bombas.com/gym. That's bombas.com/gym. But this is not just about a great discount. It's about a great story. And the great story is this. 4 years ago, two guys quit their jobs at a media company to make a difference in the world with socks. Yes, with socks. And they learned that socks were the most requested items at homeless shelters. And at the same time, they realized there was a gap in the marketplace for a better crafted and more thoughtfully thought out sock. So that's what they did. They made it. But first, they just didn't rush in and said, oh, we're just going to come up with something, sketch it out. No, they spent 2 years on R&D, 2 years. And they rethought every aspect of the sock. And they made 7 substantial improvements to the ordinary sock, which made Bombas the best sock in the history of feet. And their customers overwhelmingly claim they're obsessed with Bombas because they are the most comfortable socks they've ever worn. But get this. Not only have they made a great sock, they have made a difference because for every pair that Bombas sells, they donate a pair to those in need. Over 2 million pairs donated so far. If you need new socks, you cannot go wrong with Bombas. Whether your superpower is moving through a spreadsheet with your eyes closed or dominating your recreational volleyball league, everyone deserves comfort. And comfort is Bombas' superpower. I know you're going to love it, and you're going to love the feeling to know that you've got the best socks in the history of feet, the best socks you've ever had, and so does somebody else who really, really needs them. And here's the offer, exclusively 20% off your first order, money-back guarantee, free shipping, orders for $30 or more, and all you have to do is go to bombas.com/gym. That is bombas.com/gym. The promo code GYM will pop up, and you put that in when you make your order. And there you go. So I think you're going to love it. It is bombas.com/gym. Check them out. It's worthy. They do have the best socks in the history of feet. They've got the best story in the history of socks. And you got to check it out. You're going to thank yourself. Your feet are going to thank you. And then you're going to feel good too. Bombas.com/gym. Thanks, Bombas.
If you like the Paranormal Podcast, you'll want to check out Jim's other free podcasts. Be sure to tune in to Jim Harold's Campfire, Crime Scene, and TV You Grew Up With. You can find them at jimharold.com and wherever fine podcasts are heard. Check them out. Bet you can't listen to just one. Now, we return to the Paranormal Podcast.
And one of the things that's always interested me is this idea of different personality type, a type A personality. We hear that so often. And different ways to categorize people. I know some people can take tests and kind of figure out your personality. But we have someone today who's going to share with us a system that revolves around the idea of five elements. In fact, she's written a recent book called The Five Elements, Understand Yourself and Enhance Your Relationships with the Wisdom of the World's Oldest Personality Type System. And we're talking about Dondi Dolan, and she is our guest today, and we're so glad to have her with us. Now, Dondi is an author, speaker, and internationally acclaimed dancer, actress, and teacher. She co-authored The Little Book of Energy Medicine with her mother, Donna Eden, and heads the Teach the Teacher program for the Eden Energy Medicine Certification Program in Phoenix, Arizona. Dondi teaches the five elements at the Omega Institute in New York and at the Eden Energy Medicine Workshops around the world. She lives in San Diego. And you can find information on all she does at learnthefiveelements.com. Dondi, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be here.
So when we talk about the five elements to understand yourself, this personality type system, where does this concept come from? I mean, obviously from the title of your book, the subtitle, Wisdom of the World's Oldest Personality Type System. How far does this go back, this concept?
It goes back, it goes back very far. It is from China, and it is thought to be around 5,000 years old, although it was written into medical text about 2,000 years ago. And so what happened was Chinese physicians and scholars were working with people and their health, and they figured out that everybody here on Earth falls into a certain personality type and a health system. And so the five elements is a health system and a personality type system. And the Chinese used the metaphors of water, wood, fire, earth, and metal to kind of model these personality types. And so we say that somebody is a wood type, or someone is an earth, or my friend is a fire. And so they're very simple concepts. They get more and more rich and beautifully complex as you begin to combine them. And most everybody has two strong elements. So you could be a water and a wood, or a fire and a metal. Some people will lead with one very, very strong personality type, but most people have a combination of two, and then the other three come up in specific situations or different phases of life.
Now, how did you get introduced to this?
Well, my mom introduced it to me. My mom is an incredible healer. She's a pioneer in energy medicine. Her name is Donna Eden. And from a very early age, she started teaching my sister and I about different health systems in the body. Today, she goes around the world and she teaches 9 energy systems in the body. And these systems, you know, they're similar to what are very common to us, like the endocrine system and the nervous system. But these are energy systems. So some of the terms that people are probably familiar with are the chakras. The chakras are an energy system. The aura is an energy system. The meridians, which are energy pathways on the body. And one of the 9 systems is the five elements. And my mom started intuiting when she was a little girl about these elements. Now, she didn't have names for them. She didn't call them water and wood and fire and earth and metal, but she could see and feel that everybody had a specific vibration, and those vibrations fell into 5 categories. When she got older, she learned the system of the 5 elements and was putting it together, that is what she saw all her life. The system from China, this ancient, incredible system, is what she had been seeing.
So is this something, I mean, it sounds like this really relates to everybody, and this is something that everybody can access and take advantage of.
Absolutely. It relates to everyone. Everyone can take advantage of it. It's simple. It's very easy to learn. And what's so incredible about it is that, you know, it seems like a no-brainer that if we don't understand that there are different personality types, that, you know, we aren't going to be as versed in life, as open-minded in life, as it won't be as easy for us to get along with people. But it's not a no-brainer. We all become defensive and entrenched in our own perspective, and we go around in our lives thinking, why did he say that? Why did she do that? Oh my gosh, I would have never done what she did. And so when you learn the 5 elements, you start understanding, and it's a huge relief and a huge epiphany to know, oh my gosh, I understand why he said that. I understand why she did that. I may not have done that, but I get it because of that person's element, you can suddenly start to hear and understand and see and recognize the other person's point of view in a way that you never have before. This system is a lifesaver for relationships. And it's a beautiful system, like I said, because it's so easy to learn.
Now, when we talk about the different personality types, can you briefly take us through the five different types and some of the aspects of them?
Yes, I would love to do that. So let me run through them quickly. The water type is usually what we start with. So if people out there went online, let's say they go on the internet and they type in the five elements, oftentimes what they'll see is a wheel, and it's the elements of water, wood, fire, earth, and metal around the wheel. And this is just a way to visualize it for us. And we start with water. The water person has the archetype of the philosopher. So you can imagine with the philosopher that these people are going to be very intuitive, creative. They're going to really search for meaning in words. They're going to use metaphor. They'll be interested in mythology and what life means. And they're also water types of people are very curious about what life means in their existence here on Earth. So when you have a conversation with a water person, they aren't going to be talking to five or six people. They aren't the big social butterfly like the fire is, but they'll speak to you one-on-one. And these conversations go deep. They can talk for hours. Every element has different parts of the body that they are kind of governed by, different organs or limbs on the body. And so the water type is governed by the kidneys and the bladder. What this means is that they may be susceptible in those areas of the kidneys and the bladder with health issues. It doesn't mean that if you're a water type, you'll have problems with your kidneys and your bladder, but it's something that a Chinese physician would look to if you went into the office of somebody who practiced Chinese medicine. And they would probably quickly surmise what your element is. And they can do this by energy testing, by taking pulses, by having you take a quiz, simply by watching the way you walk or move or gesture or speak. And once they knew your element, they would go to those organs. So for water, it's kidneys and bladder. And some of our famous people, I like to give some famous people again for visual. Some of the famous people for water types. You can think of a lot of musicians, especially folk musicians from the 60s and the 70s, mm-hmm. Cat Stevens, Bob Marley, Bob Dylan, people who were really interested in the meaning of the words and the lyrics and using those words to, to really find meaning in life. So our next element is wood. Wood archetype is the pioneer, and they're very confident people. They do very well with stress. They are usually the first people to step out on the limb and say, yep, I'll do that. And they do it well, and they do it efficiently. They aren't scared of conflict at all. They kind of just take life and plow through it. And they're organs are the liver and the gallbladder. So those are the areas that we would look to with a wood person. Some of the more famous woods are Simon Cowell, the singer Pink, Bill Maher, and if I can say our recent happenings here in America, Donald Trump has a lot of wood, a lot of wood. It's confidence. It's also arrogance. Every element has a positive side and a not so positive side. We all do. And so it's not just the wood type. Going on to fire. Fires are the life of the party. They're very joyful people. They're very happy people. If they are in a situation that ever gets too serious, they are the ones in the group who will take that seriousness and spin it into something happy and optimistic and joyful and positive. And they have a lot of charisma. they really like to transform situations into fun. So these are people who are, they resonate with fun and joy and happiness, and that's, and they're like magnets for it. So you can imagine that a lot of people want to be around fires. They're the life of the party. Mm-hmm. That's their archetype, the wizard or the life of the party. Some of the wonderful fires are Ellen DeGeneres, Jim Carrey, Robin Williams. You know, these are people who, when you hear them in interviews, they'll talk about how they really want to bring happiness to people's lives. And the next element is earth. Oh, let me go back and say the parts of the body for the fire and the health challenges, they actually get four. Everyone else gets two, they get four. It is the heart and the pericardium. So the pericardium is that little sac that protects the heart. The triple warmer, and now the triple warmer isn't as familiar to people here in the West, but it's very familiar to people in China and to people who practice Chinese medicine. It is one of the main energy systems in the body, and it regulates fight, flight, or freeze. And the fire people also get the small intestine. And then on to earth. Earth people, these are your very compassionate caretakers. And that is the archetype for earth, the caretaker. They're devoted. They're loyal. They're very interested in connection between people. And they're very interested in peace. So they are the people, unlike woods, who are very comfortable with conflict. The earth type is going to avoid conflict. They're going to try and look for the peace and the calm in every situation. And they like to bring people together in that way. They're beautifully compassionate people. Some of our more famous Earths are, today is Pope Francis. He has a lot of Earth. Mr. Rogers, for those of us who were here in North America in the early 1970s, Mr. Rogers was a personality on TV.
Oh, yes, I remember him. I grew up watching Mr. Rogers, yes.
Yes, yes, me too. And he made us feel so safe and so comforted, and he'd invite us into his home or wherever he was that day. He'd put his sweater on, he'd look right into our eyes, he'd ask us to be his friend and his neighbor. This is the beautiful earth type. And whenever I go through the elements, it'll always sound like earth is the best, and then everyone wants to be an earth. But I'll tell you, remember, every element has their dark side as well. We all do. We all have a shadow side as well as the elements. And so the last element in the wheel is the metal. And the metal element archetype is the queen or the alchemist. This is a person who's a bit misunderstood. I would say the two people or the two types in the wheel who can have a lot of misunderstanding about them are the wood and the metal. So the metal is the person who is, oh my gosh, they're calm, they're cool, they're collected, they're reverent, but they also seem a bit detached from the rest of us. They're very sophisticated. When a metal enters the room, it seems like they're kind of floating above the rest of us. And so their journey in life is more of a solo journey. They also aren't the big social type of person. Your social types are your fire and your earth. They love people. The wood and the metal and the water, not as much. They're parts of the body that they kind of govern and deal with. And I'll go back to earth because I forgot to say those. But for metal, it's the large intestine and the lungs. And going back to earth, because I skipped those, it's the spleen and the stomach. Now, when I talk about these body parts and these parts of the body and these organs that an element can have a challenge with, it's not only that they have a challenge, but you start to connect the dots. Like with the metal, one of metal's lessons, so if you're a metal person, one of your lessons in life is to deal with grief and letting things go. Well, what do the large intestine and the lungs do every single day? The lungs, we breathe in and out, letting things go, letting toxins go. Of course, the large intestine as well, always letting waste go. For the wood, we have the liver and the gallbladder. Well, woods deal with anger. Mm-hmm. That is one of their main emotions. And what do we say in English, in the English language all the time? We say, oh, that galled me. That just galled me. Well, that's from the gallbladder and these organs that kind of process anger. They not only process food, we have to remember always, and it's hard for people to remember, that your body doesn't just process food and drinks and vitamins and drugs, it also processes emotions. And so we look to that a lot in Chinese medicine. But to finish up the metal, some of the more famous metal people are Angelina Jolie, Benedict Cumberbatch, Posh Spice. And so when I talk about these famous people, I like to mention them because you can start seeing that each element has a more specific body type, a face shape. They hold themselves as that element would. So what are Angelina Jolie and Benedict Cumberbatch and Posh Spice? They're tall. They're lanky. If a metal element isn't tall, they look tall. They have long limbs. The wood people, kind of the opposite. Look at Simon Cowell and Pink. They're kind of squared off shoulders, square jaws, strong jaws. The wood people are usually on the shorter side. They're stocky. Water people, even if they're thin, they're a little doughy. They have they're kind of fleshy. Earth people are more round. They hold weight in their hips. Fire people stay trim. Maybe it's because they're so joyful and so happy that they're burning calories all the time. They are on the move. Fires are often on the move. I always say to parents, if you have a fire child who, you know, fire children are sometimes mislabeled with ADHD and they may just be a fire child, let them move. Don't make them sit at their desk. Teachers out there, I hope you hear this. Fires can't sit very long, so let them get up and run around a little bit. So those are the elements in a nutshell. There are elements that get along with each other better, elements that don't. They kind of push each other's buttons. This goes deeper and deeper and becomes more and more fascinating when you start to combine the elements. And then you can start to know what words trigger certain elements. So you can kind of predict how to be in relationship with another element and what will stress them out and what won't stress them out. And so you can, train yourself to be a chameleon around all of these types of people. Maybe your boss at work is a wood. Well, they're going to care about efficiency and speed. Woods are on a mission. If you're a water type, that's going to be difficult. Waters move more slowly. They need time to process things. So it just goes on and on and on and becomes a more and more fascinating system as you learn it.
Well, that was one of the things I was going to get at, is that do certain elements conflict? You know, is it kind of like oil and water in some cases? And if so, is it something that you can overcome if you know about it?
Yes, and that is the key, knowing about it. So these oil and water elements, and that was a great way to put it, are what we call the control cycle. We say those are on each other's control cycle. These are the button pushers. And everybody has had that experience where they go into a situation, maybe it's at work, maybe it's at a party or in a bar, and there's someone in the room who just irritates you. You just don't want to be around that person. They may not be doing anything to irritate you. Yeah, but they're just there in the room and you don't want to be around them. You may be on the control cycle of that person's element. So let's take, for instance, let's take fire and water. These two are on each other's control cycle. Remember, the water is the deep thinking person. They move a little bit slower, process things more slowly. When you give them a project, just don't expect it to be done right away. If you need your husband or your wife to do something and they're water, give them plenty of time. Well, the fire is, they're moving all around. They're getting things done. They're full of joy. They're happy. They want things to be positive. Well, the water is sinking into the depths of life and saying, did you see what was on the news today? Oh my gosh, we have to worry about this and we have to worry about that. If a water can be a buzzkill for a fire, and even if they aren't speaking to each other, it's the energy. It is the energy and the vibration of those two elements. I'll tell you a quick story. I have very strong wood, and I'm on the control cycle with metal. All woods are. All woods and metals are on each other's control cycle. I'll walk into a room, and my sister, who is very, very versed in the five elements, will say, oh my gosh, I just saw all the metals cringe when you walked in. And I'll say, I didn't do anything. I didn't even talk to them. I'm smiling at everybody. Look, I love everyone. And she says, I know. They just felt it. They just felt your wood energy, and they don't even know what it is. But now they don't like you. So these are, you know, these are lighthearted stories about what we deal with on the control cycle, but it's very real. And yes, you can overcome it. That is the great thing about the five elements. My mom and her husband are on each other's control cycle. They've now been married 40 years. And what they say is because they are on each other's control cycle, they have had to evolve with each other in ways that they wouldn't have if it would have just been easy. And these two are very much into the journey and the growth and the evolution of themselves as human beings. So it's something that they were willing to go along with and take the high road with and work hard at. But being on somebody's control cycle, you learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about other people, and you learn a lot about how you handle stress. So it's great. And it's on the other side of that, we have the support cycle. And those are the elements that get along well together. And you just feel good around each other, no matter what.
Now, what do you feel that this kind of philosophy and following the five elements has done for you?
Well, what it's done for me, and I started realizing this when I got into my 20s, is that it has made my relationships smoother. It has made them easier. I have had a very, very unique life, not only of being raised by a fairly renowned healer and going all over the world and watching her heal people all over the world, but I had my own dance career that took me to Europe and Asia and all parts of the world. So I've had to work with a lot of different types of people. And I've been in situations where I know that if I didn't have the five elements, I would not have been able to get a certain job that I wanted or get along with somebody. And I'll talk about the jobs for a moment. When you know what a boss is looking for, just based on their element, they don't have to tell you anything, but you can. If you're going for a job and you walk into the room and you see the person who is hiring and you know the five elements, you can quickly sum up the shape of their face, the shape of their body, how they're gesturing, how they're speaking, and know pretty confidently what their element is. And then you can talk to them in the way that they'll be able to hear you, that they'll be able to process what you're saying, and where you will be resonating with each other. Because sometimes talking to people, you just aren't resonating with each other. You aren't hearing each other. You're just not on the same wave. So you can quickly get onto each other's wave if you know somebody's element. And not only has it helped me with relationships, but boy, oh boy, has it helped me with myself. Because being a wood type is, you know, it's an amazing element. It's a very strong person, but we do deal with anger. It's one of our main emotions. We do deal with feeling like we are right and everybody else is wrong. So how do you bring compassion into your life as a very strong wood person when you aren't familiar with that personality type and all that goes into it? I don't know what kind of person I would be if I didn't understand what being a wood means. I think I'd be more judgmental, less compassionate. I would definitely see things as more black and white. But because I know the trials and tribulations of being a wood, I understand that life isn't black and white. It's shades of gray, beautiful shades of gray. And I can go into situations and work with my anger, quell my anger, not stuff it in. I actually love anger. I think it gets a bad rap. In Chinese medicine, they say that anger is a friend in need. And that's how I like to look at anger. It's a friend in need, and I've learned to work with it. So I don't have the typical pitfalls of a wood person who loses their cool or flies off the handle because I know the five elements. And then with health, it's just incredible. Again, going back to the organs, if you know that you are an earth element and the organs that govern you are spleen and stomach, then when you have digestive problems, you aren't going to wonder, why me? Why am I having these digestive problems? You'll be able to look at the earth element and work with those digestive problems and eat the foods that are soothing and healing for the earth element. There are all sorts of foods. There are different exercises, movements. Woods do very well with karate. Metals do very well with yoga. These are two completely different types of movement. So the epiphanies, the aha moments, the amazing and incredible jewels that you learn day after day after day from the five elements make life better and easier and give you more confidence, and you start to understand the big picture and how you are a player in life. I can't say enough good things about the five elements.
Well, it is extremely interesting, and I'm assuming that a lot of our audience listening now will want to explore this further. So the question, Dondi, is where could they do that? Where can they find the book? I know there's a website for the book with a abbreviated survey. Where can they find all of this?
Yes, thank you. So the first thing that people are probably chomping at the bit to do is find out their element. And you can do that by going to learnthefiveelements.com, learnthefiveelements.com. There's a quiz there that takes you about 4 minutes, and at the end of that quiz, you will have your primary element and your secondary element, and then you'll have, a section there where you can read about the elements. If you want to read the book, you'll find out, oh my gosh, so much about raising kids, about health, about food, about how to be in relationship. And you'll have all the different combinations of the elements that get along really well, the ones not so well, and what to do in those situations. The book is called The Five Elements, and it can be purchased basically anywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores. And if I'm in an area near you, come see me. I'm headed to Portland, Oregon, then I'll be in France, Wales, and London. And I'll be in Cancun teaching next year, Cincinnati. So I've had a cough for several days. Sorry for coughing.
That's okay.
But thank you. Lots of workshops coming up, and you can see my schedule at learnthefiveelements.com.
And I've been looking at your site here and so forth, and I kind of thinking I'm a wood personality type too. So,
well, you may be. Yeah, you can start to tell from the tone in a person's voice what their element is, and you do have a tone that would make me think you have quite a lot of wood.
Well, there you go. Well, very interesting, Dondi. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. Fascinating discussion. The book is The Five Elements, Understand Yourself and Enhance Your Relationships with the Wisdom of the World's Oldest Personality Type System. Our guest has been Dondi Dalin. Dondi, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed this show as much as I did. I love the Paranormal Podcast. I love the campfire. Don't get me wrong. And I know that's many people's favorite, but your oldest always has a place in your heart, and so it is with the Paranormal Podcast. I hope that you'll rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen, because that's how people find out about this show and all of our shows for that matter. And that's one way that doesn't cost you a penny, and you can spread the love and the knowledge of the Paranormal Podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye. Now for the legal disclaimer. We do not accept money from publishers or content producers in exchange for interviews. However, as with most media outlets, in the majority of cases, we do receive complimentary copies of books and DVDs that we feature on our podcasts. Your purchases of books, DVDs, and other items via our Amazon.com links benefit Jim Harold and JimHarold.com and help us continue our programming. The sponsor messages you hear on the programs are paid endorsements, although we really do like them. For the full disclaimer, go to JimHarold.com, and thanks for listening.